drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. Comedians can get away with saying pretty much anything, for better or for worse. Let's be honest, it's mostly a good thing. But what can you say when you aren't quite yourself? Zoe Coombs-Ma has spent the past 6 years performing as Dave, a terrible male comedian. Now she's back as Zoe with a new show, Bossy Bottom. Anne Edmonds is travelling in the other direction in her show this year, performing as Helen Bedu, who you might know as the fashion expert on Get Crackin'.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. Oh. Good afternoon.
It's not the morning.
No, it's nowhere near it.
No, nowhere.
Doesn't matter though.
You just told me not to say good morning and you planted that in my head. So then I said
it. So it's entirely my fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
I'm so excited that you're here.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good day to you.
Good morrow.
Let's start with these characters you've created, Zoe. Where did Dave come from?
Dave is a parody of a hack comedian. So he sort of just came from firstly observing just hacky comedy, which is always funny, and also with my frustrations with sort of the gender imbalances that exist in the industry. So it was sort of like seeing a whole lot of terrible blokes over a period of about 10 years really and just go like, what's he doing? I want to do that.
And why does he get to do it?
Yeah. So that's where Dave came from in that way. And it started actually as a joke I used to do when I was doing a show as myself, the first comedy festival that I did, where I would do Dave in my sound check just to make my tech laugh. I'm just going like, oh, what's up with cat people and dog people? Have you ever noticed that? And it just became a thing. And someone dared me to do a whole hour of Dave. So that's where he sort of got his legs.
Dave certainly got his legs. And listeners would know Helen from Get Crackin'. Why bring her out for her own show?
Well, I just I don't know. I felt like she needed – well, there was a really good response to her on Get Cracking, and she went a bit viral with her sarong. and I've done eight – I think I've done seven or eight festivals in a row, and I've done – the last four have been stand-up shows, and I literally just had nothing further to say at this – like at this juncture. Like I just – like yeah. I was looking around.
I'm
going,
out of
I
words.
Don't know. And so for me it's really liberating to be in a character who can do whatever she wants and has a whole – backstory of her own that I can tap into. And I also, because I love writing music and playing music, so, you know, I could do that as her as well. So I just felt like a...
So you're using her?
Yeah, big time.
you're really using her, just riding on her, right?
Yeah, yeah. She's using me as well though.
How interesting though that you say you had nothing else to say, but she's got so much to say.
Mm-hmm.
How could that be? How could she have so much when you felt like you had so little?
Well, because she's got her own world and son. She's got a son that's in the show. She's got, I don't know, she's just, as soon as you, because stand-up, I don't know, you're sort of, you are trapped by the truth, really. I personally can't invent stories on stage that haven't started.
Actually happened.
Yeah, haven't actually happened. I find that I've never been able to deliver a story that's completely fanciful.
It's no, just, I neither. Just, some I, people do. Some yeah. people do. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't, yeah, it's really interesting. And I don't think that's the job of stand-up either. That's something else.
No. Well, I think the thing that's interesting, the difference between like stand-up and character, it's not so – because stand-up is also – it's a performance of a character of yourself.
Yeah.
So in the performance it's not that different. But I think it's the thing of like the audience expects that what you're saying is true. So it has to be believable. Mm. And so it has to be coming from, even if it were made up, which sometimes for some people it is, it has to be from your perspective, believably so. And that is kind of limiting in a way.
Yeah.
For me, I've been spent so long being this horrible sexist man that it's quite quite liberating in the other way that I'm just like, oh, I can just say what I think. It doesn't have to go through all these weird filters.
Yeah, 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 yeah. yeah.
The clean up is much better. I don't have a banana in my pants.
Yeah, no props.
No.
Because once you go in the character direction, you end up with, you know, a 5-hour sound check and props and noises. And
so it's more work.
Yeah, it's much more work.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've done this stupid thing where I set myself the task of doing a simple stand-up show because it would be less work, but I've got like all these like all these things that I say I'm not going to do are sort of in there as well.
So I know you want people to see your show, but just give me a sense of these things you don't want to do that you're doing now.
I've got all these techie, stupid things in there that are really just there as like, I find it really funny when you put a lot of effort into doing something that has no meaning or purpose. So I've got a few things like that. It may or may not be. There's some electronics, which were very hard to get past OH&S. Mm. I'll just say that.
It depends what kind of comedian you are. Like, an hour is a long time.
It's a really long time.
For someone to just talk. And there are masters of that. But even me, you know, I'm a comedian. I'm looking at my watch at the 45-minute mark.
You have to be pretty, it has to be pretty like
enthralling. Hannah or Hannah Gadsby or something.
But she's doing something there as well where she's kind of like flipping comedy.
Yeah.
She's doing something with it. I think you have to be, and I do really respect, and I love stand up as a form and watching it unfold. Mm. And some people are complete masters at it. But for myself, I find, especially because I set out with this task of going, like, I'm going to do just a stand-up show. I get bored of what I have to say. I'm like, oh, God, shut up, Koomsma.
Yeah. Yeah. It does get like that. And so the thought of chucking a song in there or something else is pretty appealing for your sake and the audience's sake, I guess.
Yeah.
Chuck in a song.
Chuck a song in.
Well, why not? Why not?
Yeah.
Zoe, you sort of referenced this at the start. Comedy has been traditionally dominated by men. Mm. Well, it still is. This has been traditionally. Well, it's still kind of, there's still more of them.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's a numerical fact.
And there's a broader appeal in that sort of sense, like big audiences and stuff tend to be, you know, like more people want to go see big name male acts. That's a statistical thing.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently. And Hannah. I mean, you mentioned her. A lot of exciting names now are women, but they are doing something a bit different. It's not kind of always just the same, right?
I think, I don't know. I think, I mean, everyone's sort of doing different things. I think my experience of doing stand-up was that the form is, because it's, I mean, stand-up sort of arises from, like, it kind of comes from, like, borscht belt kind of entertaining mums and dads and also like strip clubs.
Yes, that's its origins. Yeah.
So it's not a form that is like kind of naturally made for different sorts of people really. But and that's why the most interesting stuff I think, and it always has been traditionally, like if you look at like, you know, comics like Lenny Bruce or Richard Pryor or they were comics who were coming from different directions and trying to flip and change the forms. Like the most interesting people doing stuff at any point are the ones who are doing something with the form. Otherwise, you're just doing something someone else has already done.
There are also as well, though, there's some of the biggest sellers in the festival, Kitty Flanagan, Ursula Carlson and Judith, you know, and they're straight stand-ups and like some of the best. So there are women doing different stuff, but there is also like
women
Kitty Flanagan
just
one of the strongest stand-ups around. So yeah, I don't know. Like everyone's just doing what they're good at, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it's, I think there's sort of like a natural draw to for some people to kind of mess with the form and like mess with what's going on, and others that are just like total craftsmen, masters, and
Celia Piccola's the other one.
She's amazing. She's smashing it.
Mm. Smashing it on RN. I'm Patricia Carvelis, and two women who are smashing it with me are Anne Edmonds and Zoe Koomsma. They're my guests in the drawing room. We're talking about comedy in character and comedy as yourself. Funny you.
This is just therapy, isn't it?
This whole segment
Who am
is.
I?
This segment is. Zoe, you said in your show that no one wants to hear comedy about intersectional feminism while performing great comedy about just that, right? But do you think the boundaries of comedy are changing? We're kind of going to that. I mean, no one wants to hear comedy about intersectional feminism, but yet there is kind of a thirst for something.
Something
that says something about what's going on in our world.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, take my wife jokes just started getting old, didn't they?
Tell me how your wife jokes are getting old.
No, take my wife jokes. But I've got about 40 minutes on take my wife. No, I don't. But I think people want to see comedy that's about something often because, like I was saying, it's like an hour. It's a long time. You got to have something to pique your interest, but or hold your interest. My show this year, though, I'm really interested in just making stuff that's just about nothing. Like, it's got, I say it to the audience as well. I'm like, there's no message to this show. There's no politics.
No theme.
There's no theme. It's just jokes. It's just purely anything that I think is a bit funny and is going to make you laugh is in there. It's just dumb.
So what's your process when you're making a character like this and developing like an entire show around this character? Mm-hmm. Kind of, how do you work it? Like, do you practice it in front of a couple of trusted people? I'm always intrigued, and I feel like I never hear enough from comedians about that backstory.
Well, it was a similar process to what I follow with stand-up, to be honest. I thought if she's going to have to perform in that environment, that comedy environment, I better start as I always do in the open mics. So I literally just started turning up as, instead of myself, as Helen.
Helen started arriving.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
Yeah, and started doing, you know, trying to connect with an audience that probably maybe haven't got the context of the Get Cracking show or have never seen her before, and trying to get her funny enough to survive any kind of open mic anywhere was my starting point. And then the songs are just, yeah, I mean, the songs are really fun to write. I just do that on my own and work with someone producing them, and then that's it. It's on.
And you said off mic, and now I'm going to bring it up on mic. Mm-hmm. My show's a bit loose.
Very loose.
What does that mean? I mean, I know what loose means, but how do you mean it?
I won't spoil anything, but there's something wrong with Helen. fundamentally. And it just, she just can't get through 5 minutes without having a meltdown. Like, it's just, she's just something snaps.
She's an amazing character.
Yeah. And then she'll get up again and just be like, yeah, no, I've got this. And then something else will trigger her and she's off again. And yes, and it all sort of heads that way. She's very upset about her second life partner, Simon, leaving. Very.
Simon.
He keeps, and her poor son, he comes up too often. You know those people that have broken up with someone, you're like, wow, like they can bring every conversation back to, you know, Simon does that, and you're like, oh, wow.
Oh, that was so, sometimes it's amazing to see the sort of the long bows that people can draw in order to bring.
It
like
is incredible, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
That's the fun thing I think about like character stuff is when you can sort of reach that a kind of mania. Like, I think as comics you sort of, I know you do, and I do as well. I find like human behavior, and like particularly like when people are on the verge of meltdown or fully crack it, or even those weird things where they can find a way to bring something really dark up in a conversation that is not about that. That's the sort of really fun stuff that you can actually bring into the actual space and time with the audience. Like watching someone have a meltdown on stage is the best.
Yeah. And it's something you, as a stand-up myself, that you've been on the verge of on stage. Well, I have many times.
Have you? Tell me about that.
Oh, of course. Like when you're in an environment, you know, when you're in a, I don't know, rural Australia or somewhere and the gig's not going well, or I've been on and you're just like, I'm going to snap. Like, I cannot do, they, maybe you've been on tour for like a month. It's like, I cannot do this anymore. And I can't, as Anne Edmonds, just start going,
you know. Well, you can.
I could.
That'd go viral.
I've seen it.
Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. We've all seen meltdowns on stage. It's the best. It's the
what
best
happens?
Thing.
I don't know how many I have seen, actually.
I actually talk in my show a bit about the very first gig that I did. I saw a guy do like just bomb in the most spectacular way, and I just became obsessed with it. Seeing people try, because you're meant to hold it together on stage, and you're meant to be in charge. And when even it can even happen subtly, but when you see someone just go like, "Oh no,"
you see it
in the eyes. It's amazing. If you ever, people I think get really scared about, like get quite anxious about comedy, like watching it because if the comedian's not going well, but.
It's funny that group anxiety, because it's true. Yes. The audience is anxious with you.
They get really
I go
scary.
In and I'm like, I really want you to do well.
Yeah.
I'm worried
it's
for you.
Isn't
I'm going to try and laugh.
Yeah.
If you're in, but comics, because we kind of go through it, it becomes like a real sick fascination.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So if you're ever in a lineup show, like watching a lineup show and someone's bombing, just turn around because there'll be like 10 people in the back of the room
loving
it, just loving it.
Yeah.
It's the best thing that's happened all night.
And The other thing that happens is, and I've been guilty of this, is the attack on the audience, which is a really common comedian.
Yes, I have seen that.
Yeah, we've all done that, where you just flip and you can't. And of course, the poor audience doesn't have the context of the last 10 shows that haven't gone well or whatever it is where you just, it's like, what do you want from me? You know, I've been down that road. So it's sort of, you know, it's like that for Helen, but I'm able to go where I'd love to go sometimes as myself.
Yeah, and it's funny. I think that's the thing. It's like kind of you can do that sort of stuff and have that meltdown and create that. It's funny.
Yeah.
So do you worry about that as a comedian, having your own personal life creep in? Is your character like really separate to who you are? Is a bit of you in this character?
No, because every character I've ever done has elements of me in it. They're always an extreme version of of me.
An exaggerated version.
Yeah,
of you.
One element of me, you know. And I think there's a character I did for a while called Rebecca, who's in one of my shows.
Love Rebecca.
I love Rebecca. She's in my show Edge of the Bush, and she snaps all the time. And and people are like, oh, where's that coming from? But I think if you were any one of my exes, you'd be like, oh, I've seen that.
Like, no, you're Rebecca.
Yeah. There's elements of me and Helen. There's, you know, that's where it has to come from somewhere.
It has to. Yeah, Dave and I also look very similar. We've got quite a similar bone structure.
That's incredible. But you've what got a coincidence.
Like, in Dave, you've got like your, you've got your bum humour. Like, do you know what I mean?
Totally.
Like it's there in terms of poo and
silly
and body things.
Yeah, like silly. I really get obsessed with like grotesque stuff and just silliness and silly jokes. And Dave is I really love jokes as well, like just dumb jokes.
Just real jokes.
And Dave is like a really great way to be able to do that. Like I wrote all of Dave's material.
Mm.
That's the thing that people sometimes forget. Like, oh God, the jokes are so bad. And I'm like,
They're kind of my jokes,
but also I love those jokes.
So you secretly think Dave has something to offer.
Definitely.
Other than just laughing at him.
Well, yeah,
should
totally.
Laugh,
poor
like,
Dave.
With him as well.
He's a beautiful little guy. He's just in a weird situation.
Mm. That's interesting, actually. Does that mean you have to have some empathy for the person that you're playing too?
100%. And you want that, and you want the audience to have that as well. You've got to have, with any character, and I mean, even if they're the most tragic character of all time, and David Brent from The Office is the prime example of that, you still like that guy. You have to. You have to have – otherwise the audience will just go, oh, nah. Like, they need to sort of have some sort of attachment and reason to keep watching her and going, oh, God, it's so sad. Really, it's always sad.
And you have to like them in order to because you spend a lot of time with that character and you have to inhabit them. So you have to – you have to have some sort of empathy for them. And I think also with those great kind of cringy characters, there's like that vulnerability is like it's a really fine line of, well, it's like what we're talking about, like people bombing. It's like a really fine line between that vulnerability and like horribleness and really funny. When people are really on that edge is when it becomes sort of hysteria because the audience is like, what's going on?
So outside of the actually, you know, the onstage bit, the comedy festival comedians have a reputation for sort of boozing big night out, you know.
I was just was having a couple of drinks with my friends. I didn't mean anything I said.
You guys,
have you heard?
I've heard everything. Okay,
she can't remember any of it.
Do you have like a really good time while the festival's on as well, or do you get kind of really focused on I'm just performing and I go home?
I used to in my early years. It's the best time. You know, when you're doing a show to 8 people a night and you're suddenly in this comedy world and you're surrounded by other comedians and you don't have a job, I just had the time of my life. In more recent years, I've tried to just scale it back a bit and make it more like a job, but I still do have fun.
Yeah, I still have fun, but it's a similar sort of thing. I think also, like, you know, you get older, like you get.
God, aging sounds so boring, guys. Older.
Older and stuff. But also it is more of a job and you are sort of, you know what you're doing a little bit more and it's not as, like, it's not your first time at the fair.
No.
So it's kind of, but it's still, we have a lot of fun. I mean, it's about making people laugh and having fun and, you know, that's great fun. And you're surrounded by really funny people all the time and comedians are great and the worst.
The
also.
Worst, some of them, yeah.
The worst. Not you guys, though. You're not, not the worst. No, you're we're not the we're worst. The, you're the best.
We might be someone else's worst.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah. God.
Not them.
Well, your characters might be. Hey, thanks for coming in.
thanks for having us.
Zoe Coombs-Ma and Anne Edmonds have been my guests in the drawing room. You can catch them both at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival during April. Just look up the website to see when their shows are on.